So I know that she did get neoadjuvant therapy, FOLFIRINOX, but also I see that she had some biliary obstruction at the same time.
Right. So I should have mentioned, so for patients who we're increasingly treating patients with borderline and even truly resectable disease upfront with chemotherapy. And so decompression of their biliary system is obviously the first step. We want normal or near normal liver function tests before starting a patient on chemotherapy, especially a regimen like FOLFIRINOX, where obviously irinotecan is partially metabolized by the liver. So yes, endobiliary stenting is an important first step before we get going with chemotherapy.
So what happened when you gave her the FOLFIRINOX?
So we re-imaged regularly along the way, and over time we saw that that primary tumor was in fact responding. So you were seeing shrinkage, you were seeing sort of separation with development of a fat plane between the tumor and, in her case, the superior mesenteric artery. Now, this is still a moving target in terms of how much chemotherapy do you need. And at our institution, we'll give up to 12 cycles in total. Other places might do 6 to 8. And then there's the equally controversial question of, is radiation necessary in that preoperative setting? Our institutional bias is no, we don't. At other major cancer centers, they believe that short course radiation for borderline resectable disease is absolutely essential. That is the subject of an ongoing, almost complete Alliance Cooperative Group study, specifically in the borderline resectable setting, FOLFIRINOX plus or minus SBRT prior to surgical resection for borderline resectable disease.
So, first of all, how did she tolerate the FOLFIRINOX and what happened to the tumor?
So, as a young and otherwise healthy woman, she actually responded very well and tolerated well with the requisite side effects that we see, some cumulative modest peripheral sensory neuropathy and cold sensitivity, mild cytopenias. We do prophylax with growth factor support with this regimen, given the high rates of neutropenia. But she actually made it through treatment quite well, and we were able to push her out to 12 cycles in total before taking her to surgery.
And what was seen at surgery?
So what you'll see, such as in her case, is patients can have a very robust pathologic response, and you might even see the occasional complete pathologic response. In her case, she had just an excellent treatment effect with a small amount of residual tumor cells scattered in the surgical specimen. There was one lymph node involved, and she recovered well from that operation.
What do you do if a patient really doesn't have a good response or doesn't have an adequate response?
So this is really, again, another open question as we're moving more to the neoadjuvant setting in terms of what do you do afterwards? Do you give more of the same chemotherapy? And that really depends on how much they got sort of on the front end. Do you switch then at that point if, as you said, there's not a great response and there's still just a lot of tumor or a lot of nodes? Do you switch then to a gemcitabine-based regimen? These are currently unanswered questions. If someone's really had a poor response and has a lot of residual nodal disease, I might be inclined to give them some additional gemcitabine-based chemotherapy. Now, again, this isn't clearly data-driven, and patients from the cumulative toxicities of their preoperative chemotherapy may not be candidates for as much chemotherapy on the back end after undergoing a major surgery, and they might be left with some mild cytopenias and things. So you got to sort of take it a little bit holistically in deciding that.
So this lady sounds like she's doing great. She's NED. What's the latest that you see recurrences, and at what point do you say you're cured?
So our surveillance strategies for such patients are informed based on the pattern of recurrence, which is most common during the first year or two after surgery, and then it gradually drops off after that. So we might scan them every 3 to 4 months for the first year or two and then space them out after that to every 6 months or so. I'm feeling increasingly confident by, say, year 3 or year 4 that their chances are pretty good that they might be in that subset of patients who might actually be cured from their disease. And I've got patients who sort of 5 years later, I'll either stop seeing them or maybe just see them once a year with or without imaging. I've got a number of folks who fit into that category.